Hey everybody, we're doing Lost Odyssey tonight. It's the perfect chance for us all to break out those immortal jokes.
You mean jokes that are always funny?
No. Jokes about immortal people. You know, they never get old.
Ooh, if they're bad, then they didn't age well.
I mean, if they're legless, they can't kick the bucket. Heyo!
Just like them, the joke never dies.
I hate you guys so much.
So no one settled, games were gonna be this way. Backlog's a joke, a choke, gamer cards at my hay. It's like you always play 2 years behind. When you really need a boost to heart, to health, or even your mind. No, Cal will be there for you.
She'll say games that are so.
Matt will be there for you.
When you're feeling.
We'll be there for you.
Cause we're more than the two.
Hello and welcome to RPG Backtrack, your regular deep dive into your favorite RPGs. We are a production of RPGamer.com, bringing you such fine podcasts like RPG Cast, your weekly RPG news show, Q&A Quest, your weekly RPG feedback show, and us, your bi-weekly RPG nostalgia show. I am your host, Kelly Ryan, and with me, as always, my podcast partner in crime, the kine to my Seth, Mr. Matt Mason.
Oh, I'm already lost. Tonight's going to be one hell of an odyssey.
Especially since there is no kine in this game.
I'm sorry, I said his name wrong. Kine?
Different game.
Kine
is a very different game.
Yeah, that's the chick from Nier, not the main character. Okay, I already screwed up. We can pack this in. No, I'm kidding. I got the name confused because I had been watching Lost Odyssey videos all day, and just for some reason my head felt the need to put an extra syllable in there. So that voice you heard was Pascal Takaya.
Hey, there can only be one immortal. Get it?
Yeah, I should have done a Highlander.
Becoming a Highlander.
We've also got Wheels.
Do immortals have to deal with Red Rings of Death?
Oh, that is a good question. And Ryan McCarthy.
So what happens to immortals when their heads get cut off?
Well, in the Highlander movies, they just die.
True.
In Deadpool, if what is said is to be believed, he just grows another body.
Yeah. And in this game, there is not enough decapitation to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, no decapitation in this one.
They really should have just gone for that M rating.
It would fit, I think.
Yeah.
It wouldn't feel out of place here.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want any of the characters to be decapitated, but.
Well, no, but I mean.
Oh, God. The more I think about it, isn't there enough, like, mental suffering for those poor children to endure already?
Oh, jeez.
Oh, Lord.
Won't someone please think of the children?
Won't somebody please think of the children?
And you wouldn't even have to. It wouldn't even have to be like super graphic. You probably just like just show in a way where you're not seeing the graphic details.
Ryan, I was already screwed up enough by this game. I feel like I went through some stuff when I played it in the best / worst possible way.
I have never come around a game harder than in this game, I think. Because I was ready to rage quit it at first because it has a very difficult opening. And then once you get through all of it, it gets pretty good.
It yet.
Eventually.
Yeah. That one boss early on is.
There's a couple of bosses early on that are like DPS checks.
Oh, this one boss in particular is just like I get what you mean by the other boss, but this one I'm talking about is like I actually replayed the first disc of this for this podcast.
Oh God, and why? so sorry.
we started that one.
By the the way we said it in the intro, and we've said it a couple of times, it's Lost Odyssey, the one of the many RPGs that are unfortunately stuck on the 360, and one of the reasons why I still have my 360 plugged in.
You can play it on any Xbox.
Yeah, I just have my 360. Yeah. I have it up. My husband has the other Xboxes, and he plays those more, but I just haven't seen a need to upgrade. And it plays just fine. Slow as hell, but yeah, plays.
I think it loads faster in the newer ones. That's about it.
But Lost Odyssey. Good game. Very, very good game, but just has kind of a learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, why don't we take a brief musical interlude with some of the gorgeous Uematsu music from this game, and then when we come back, we'll just dive right in. Back to RPG Backtrack, where we are talking about Lost Odyssey, released February 12th, 2008 in North America. It had come out 3 months before, December 6th, 2007. So this game is, what, 14 years old?
More.
If more? Sorry, my math sucks.
Yeah, because it's more like 17 years at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Give or take a few months, I guess, whatever. That's... I you know, don't carry around a list of release dates with me. So when I researched that today, that kind of blew my mind a little bit, because, boy, this game has definitely lived on well in my head since then. And I can't believe it's been almost 20 years.
Funny thing about doing this backtrack at this time is the week that Fantasian releases on consoles. And that's Mistwalker's latest game. And supposedly... both Nobuo and Sakaguchi are retiring after this. I know Nobuo is not doing full game soundtracks anymore, so sort of partial retirement, but I think pretty sure Sakaguchi said that he is retiring.
Yeah, again, I mean, when the game released 20 years ago, they were already I suppose in their like latter half of their careers, and you know, time moves on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Not this isn't Mistwalker's first game. That's Blue Dragon. We'll probably get to that one at some point.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ryan, for pointing that out to me, because I wasn't sure which one came out first. Because this was that batch of JRPGs that came out on Xbox only. And
the weird concept.
Yeah, and Microsoft was just throwing money at Eastern developers trying to get RPGs on there to make the 360 take off more in Japan. And I don't think it worked, because just about every single one except the Mistwalker ones and some obscure ones like Operation Darkness eventually came to PS3.
Yeah, but I wonder how much of the Mistwalker games not coming to, you know, I guess other systems, like, I wonder how much of that is just the company kind of switching focus.
It's probably because they were bankrolled by Microsoft.
The only other game I remember besides the console ones and Fantasian was Terra Battle on mobile.
Yeah.
Because I played the crap out of that on my first phone. And that was supposed to come to Vita at one point and then got canceled. And then Terra Battle 2 came out and I could not get into that one. And then the game got taken off. So,
yeah. Yeah,
don't forget the two sequels to Blue Dragon.
Yeah.
They really tried to make that franchise, huh?
Yeah, I mean, wasn't there an anime tie-in as well?
I think it actually aired on Toonami briefly, like back in like the old like I think like towards the original Toonami, when that was on its way out originally.
But I thought that Blue Dragon was meant to be more of a send-up to Dragon Quest. This one was meant to be more of a send-up to Final Fantasy.
I mean, honestly, Blue Dragon is more like a mix of like the combat of Dragon Quest and Dragon Ball Z. I don't think there's honestly a lot of Dragon Quest DNA in it other than that.
Was it Toriyama?
Yeah.
Yeah, Toriyama.
I was going to say that in my mind, it's like very Toriyama, and that's the connection there.
Looks wise, yes. Story wise, dear Lord, no.
But when I played this one, it was like, I feel like I've gone back in time to college and I'm playing through Final Fantasy X again, just as a different game. Because the UI, the combat, just everything reminded me so much of Final Fantasy X.
Yeah, it kind of does in a way.
Well,
yeah, I mean, it's not exactly the same, like, because the battle system, because Lost Odyssey's battle system is more like, oh, you pick all your party members' turns before they go, whereas X is very much like, you pick a party member's action and then they execute it instantly.
Well, that may be a little different from 10, but it's still very turn-based Final Fantasy. You know, if you go back a little bit, it's not. I don't actually recall. Do you pick all of them at once?
Yes.
In Lost Odyssey. Yeah. So it's not active time battle. It's just pure turn-based.
Final Fantasy X is technically also technically. Traditional,
it's not active time battle.
Yeah, that's right.
The turn order. I forget what they called it in 10.
A conditional turn something.
I mean, I feel like you'd be more than forgiven for looking at this as a Final Fantasy game. I mean,
a
couple of weeks ago we talked about Final Fantasy 13, and I don't know like how the two games compare like release date, but to me personally, this was probably more of the next Final Fantasy than Final Fantasy ever was.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I always called this, hey, this is my Final Fantasy 11.
I mean, Wario 64 on used to be Twitter, now it's, he mostly posts on Blue Sky. Every time he posts the box art of this game, it says Final Fantasy 13 on the box art. and let's see, 13 came out in 2009, this came out in 2008, so there's about a one to two year gap in between games. They came out close enough that it certainly felt like one of them could have been a Final Fantasy game. But it's funny, we were talking about Final Fantasy 13 last week and the troubled development because they were trying to put together that Crystal Tools engine. They used Unreal Engine 3 as the middleware for this game and had many problems with the graphics because of it. And even doing research, I was reading people saying that this game looks terrible because of it. I don't think so. I definitely don't think so.
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that either. I mean, some of the hair texturing looks weird, but whatever.
The hair looks a little bit, some people's hair looks like static fishing nets a little bit. But I mean, I don't know. Other games have that same issue. It's okay.
Especially Seth's is the
one. That's what I'm thinking of. But you know what, that still occurs in 2024, so I forgive a 20-year-old game for that. It's okay.
I mean, we were just coming off the PS2 and companies were still trying to figure out exactly how to deal with the HD graphics, and at least they didn't compromise the game, making this game look good, kind of like how 13 had to.
Yeah, I mean, making your own engine is not easy. That's why it's kind of not really a thing anymore.
Yeah, everybody uses Unreal or what's the other one? Unity. Unity.
Yeah, and there's a few other ones out there like Frostbite. I think there's some games still using Valve's engine. I forget what the heck it's called.
Source.
Yeah.
And doing some more research, basically Sakaguchi wanted to create a more kind of serious game with this.
Yeah.
A tale kind of told, seemingly told across multiple multiple eras. I'm just kind of going through my notes here. I actually got a real writer to do the memories, the visual poems.
Thousand Years of Dreams.
Yeah.
I looked him up. It was Kiyoshi Shigematsu.
Yeah.
Japanese novelist Kiyoshi Shigematsu. I personally, like, I never found the game to be lacking, by the way, like, visually. I did think it looked good. I still would consider that.
It's just easy to notice how weird some of the hair texturing looked.
Yeah, for sure. Even back, like, I remember that was, like, the one thing that stuck out to me. Like, ooh, what is going on with her hair? I'm not even, like, the biggest fan, I think, of maybe the character designs. Like, they're okay. They don't stand out to me in a particular way. Like, they're not identifiable, I think. They're a little bit maybe generic. I don't know if that's too harsh. That might be too harsh.
I wouldn't call them generic. I think they look kind of memorable.
But the look of it is very kind of like stylistic. Like, it looks good in a way. I don't know how to say it's not ugly.
Yeah, it looks very, it's very earth tone-ish. Or Tony?
Yeah.
I think that's
the serious nature of the game, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
Are you saying that, Ryan, that the game kind of suffers from the brown thing that was going on with the Xbox?
I wouldn't even say it's brown. It's not garishly colorful.
Yeah,
is what I'm saying. It's more muted. I would say more muted.
It's not as bad as other games from that era, though.
Oh yeah,
by any stretch.
Oh yeah.
No, I mean, I noticed it in some sounds, especially at the beginning of the game, but not as much as other games of the time. Like, it certainly didn't look as brown as like Gears of War.
Oh, it's not. It is not oppressively like brown looking. I'm not saying that.
And it was kind of neat that you could see a lot of details on the character designs.
Yeah, I find myself just kind of like hard pressed to talk about the character designs. Aren't like that big of a celebration, I think. Like Keim, okay, so the protagonist, I think he might be the worst one. He's like, he just looks kind of boring and dull to me.
And generic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I am inclined to agree.
He does have that midriff thing going on, though.
Yeah.
Oh, does he? I don't remember that.
Yeah. Well, they literally even lampshade this in the very beginning of the game when those like cavalry guys or whatever are like,
I can't
believe you survived that, especially considering what he's wearing or whatever.
Does he also have the like really creepy old man like six pack that the guy from Tales of Vesperia has? Is it Vesperia? What's the one with the dog?
I don't remember seeing
Vesperia.
Yeah.
I don't think we see a good look of that, so I wouldn't be able to say.
Thank God. Yeah, so I know there's like story reasons why Keim is so like kind of stone-faced for much of the early game, but that didn't exactly help me connect to him right away.
The crux of the game is that he's an immortal and is just kind of has seen it all and done it all and lost most of his memories and is just kind of jaded about it all.
Yeah, but you don't know that right away. And I think even he doesn't know all of it because he, like you say, he's forgotten it. So he just kind of comes across a little wooden for a while. Until I think it's his interactions with the other characters that start bringing out a little bit more of the story. And then you kind of, that's what's going on. And that's why he's like this. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, like halfway through, I don't know, like what order we want to discuss this in, but when his part of the narrative becomes like super personal, that's when, oh man. Oh, like I just love the story of this game, or parts of the story, I should say, at least.
Yeah, once he gets his memories back, I think that he becomes a much more interesting character. The first half of the game, he's definitely bland, and I feel like once Jansen comes into the picture, it's like, okay, here's the levity.
Mm-hmm.
First half, wait, I thought, never mind, I don't know. Talk about
well it's, I mean, Kaim is by himself only like at very first. And then I think within maybe even like after the first, you know, couple of battles, you're pretty much joining up with Jensen and Seth.
Yeah.
I mean, it becomes like a trio pretty early on. And, but that's like, that's it. Like it's Jensen and Seth who have who add the character. Like Kaim doesn't like contribute anything on that level for a long time.
Yeah. Kaim is kind of lost for the first stretch of this game.
Yeah. So it's all Jensen. And then Seth, I don't know, anything is better than a wooden plank. So Seth shines.
Mm-hmm. I think he's pretty well written. I don't think it's just because he's
he's
the only one with personality. I think he's
written pretty fine. He's written perfectly fine.
It's who, Kaim or who
are we talking about?
Kaim.
Jensen.
No, yeah, I like Jensen. Right,
yeah, Jensen. Yeah, Jensen's good.
Oh yeah, he's my favorite. Spoiler.
He's very good. He's funny.
I think once you meet Kaim's daughter and kind of things start to come into focus, he's a lot more interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you meet Cook and Mac and that whole thing, he definitely starts being more a little less, like slightly less stoic.
Palom and Porom 2.0.
Yeah.
I've heard that. I also am very surprised, not here now, but in doing research, I heard a lot of hate for Jensen.
Really?
I don't get it.
Really?
Uh huh.
I swear, I think I know.
I mean, he's silly, but
I guess
to some people, over the top, he's kind of I think he's like the only silly character in the game. Maybe not, but like,
I mean, Cook and that can be a little, but they're kids. Yeah, they're kids. They're allowed.
And they also, in addition to that, they go through the most harrowing crap of anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they have a pass to be silly sometimes if they want to be.
Yeah.
Put it this way. I thought Jensen was considerably less irritating than other comic relief characters.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In other games. He was snarky and he brought a lot of levity to different situations, but he wasn't annoying.
Yeah. He wasn't Maro. Yeah.
Dragon.
That's a story for another day.
You really felt like he added to the party dynamic. Yeah, I think like his whole thing really like livened up the party dynamic.
Mm.
He kind of is like a little like Errol Flynn, or maybe just in his own mind, like he's the Robin Hood guy. He's because he's a magic user, but kind of comes off like kind of as a rogue a little bit, and he's a womanizer. And he literally will leave the party to go make eyes at the queen and try to flirt with her. And then he gets kind of, at some point, I know he gets like shy and bashful when she starts flirting back because he wasn't expecting it. He doesn't know how to handle it. Like, it's kind of likable.
He actually just tries to be like, he tries really hard to like be like, oh, I'm such a romantic. And like, and then being like literally just fakes like being unconscious, and then then Jensen's like carrying.
Yeah, so I think
when he joins the party, the
scene that he officially joins in, he's being carried over to like Kaim's door.
He's drunk,
and on the arm of like three girls that have to carry his ass over so that the party doesn't leave without him or whatever it is, because he has to go along on some mission with them.
Yeah,
so that's a hell of an intro right there.
Yeah, because he's basically Gongor's mole.
What a way to introduce a character, by the way.
Pretty good.
Well, I mean, the way you he's actually introduced a bit before that.
Yeah.
Because he's like following Kaim around, and then Kaim just like fucking fucking grabs him by the neck and slams him to the wall.
Yeah. And there's a couple of other interesting turns with that relationship early on. So such as when the player finds out that Jensen kind of has like a secret mission to undermine Kaim and Seth, like he's kind of spying on them and reporting
back
to the bad guy.
He has this thing that can erase memories.
It's like a crystal, and he's being told like use it on them in case they regain their memories to keep them amnesiac.
And then he just uses on on that one guard when they're in that like dungeon cell.
And then even past that point, like, when he kind of, you know, when he comes clean and admits that, like, he had that secret mission all along, but like, not anymore. Now I'm, you know, I'm with you guys now, and so such and such. And then later it turns out that he had a magic contact lens, and Gongora was spying on them through like everything Jansen was seeing, even without his knowledge. So he still continues to be kind of like a Trojan horse. Mm-hmm. Kind of just feel bad for him at that point a little bit. He keeps betraying his new friends.
The main bad guy, what's his name? Gongan?
Gongora.
He wasn't really telegraphing his end goal at the beginning of the game, other than trying to get these two big nations to basically go to war to each other, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
But what was the end goal? Just generic, I want to take over the world, wasn't it?
He wanted to take down the fucking, like, portal thing between their two worlds.
Yeah, that was basically his end goal, was that he wanted to kill the portal, merge the two worlds, to basically recreate the world by destroying it.
Fun.
I don't find him particularly interesting.
he's kind of typical Urum evil bad guy.
So, considering that you find out he's also immortal and that they have a past together, I think there's a lot more interesting things they could have done with that rather than one power.
I feel like the main narrative kind of ends up being a little rote by the end.
Yeah, I think the main narrative is actually my least favorite aspect of the whole game.
Yeah.
Just in terms of like the story progression. Like earlier I said, like, I like parts of the story, not the actual narrative.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a game you want to play for the characters and kind of their story.
The characters are good.
Yes. Yeah, and just whatever the main story is, just kind of something to put them through on an adventure. Mm. And almost, I don't want to say it doesn't matter, because you certainly probably could have written something more interesting for them to do, but it's just kind of sufficient.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a drop ball, because when you're when half of your cast is immortal and you literally have no limit to the wealth of stories you could draw on for them, that it's a little sad that there wasn't more to that effect. Yeah, but yeah, no.
I felt like they needed to do more with like those great short stories they put in, which are excellent, but they don't really connect to the game that well.
Well, yeah, they're more for developing Kyrim's character, really.
They are, but I felt like there's a way that maybe this was a budget thing or something. I think it would have been more interesting instead of like, hey, here's this short story you can read about how Kyrim used to live in this village and it got destroyed by an earthquake, and he comes back hundreds of years later and they have a celebration every year when the earthquake was and they don't know why. Very touching story.
Yeah.
I think it would have been more interesting if that happens by you going to that village during that celebration as part of the story, instead of just being some random thing you can read.
I definitely have to wonder if Sakaguchi or whoever was like involved with the main story stuff was kind of struggling with something.
I don't, you know what? I'm with you like in part on that. I think, and I honestly don't remember many of the stories in particular. There probably are some more like events that might have been interesting to experience via gameplay, but I do think like some of the stories that I'm pretty sure there was one like this is maybe the only one I remember parts of about like a little girl who was dying and kind of connected to her, and she died anyway.
That was one of the first ones that
or maybe other ones like that are more like introspective. I'm kind of glad that you got to read them, because the prose is really, really good.
Yeah.
And props also to the whoever translated it, because they did a hell of a job translating those visual novel segments. I'm glad I got to read those, because you get insight by reading that you probably wouldn't get quite as deep in, like, by playing a game and just seeing a text box pop up.
Yeah. I could see that. But I mean, just as a whole, it felt like the immortal concept was, I don't think it was used well enough in the main story. Like for those side stories, you know, however they did them, it was wonderfully done, but it just wasn't integrated enough in the main story for me.
Yeah, I could see like this DLC, like a
missed opportunity,
like DLC with more, you know, stories about the characters, like that you actually get to play, or even the fact that a sequel was never made. You could, with 1,000 years, make a prequel set somewhere in the distant past, so it's not connected to this, because to this game, because then it'd be a little predictable of how it all ends. But again, there's so much like fertile ground that you could cash in, and that has not happened. That's a damn shame.
I mean, you could make a game like Dragon Quest V, where, you know, you go through the generations, except your main character is always there.
Mm.
But how interesting could that be? Like this character having different families and going down the generations, experiencing life and loss.
That would be really cool.
Yeah.
So basically Saga 2 and or Phantasy Star 3.
Saga 2, but more serious.
Or Romancing Saga.
Saga 2, but more serious, yeah.
I think that could really work well for Gangora too. Because I'm just going to go ahead and assume that they weren't always, that he wasn't always like scheming villain.
Yeah.
Love to see like a little, like when were they allies? When did they work together? What did they do? Like some great stuff.
When did he turn?
And why?
Yeah.
Did he just go mad from like experiencing so much life and loss?
That's
so much you could do.
I feel like there just really isn't that much to Gangora at the end of the day, and that's really my issue.
Yeah,
not in this, not here, because it's just the end of the journey for them, right? So the end, like he's already the villain. He even looks the part, so it's not like very surprising when he turns out to be the bad guy.
Yeah, the design is like okay, like I don't know how anyone could be morally surprised this is the bad guy.
So the mortal stuff isn't very interesting story wise, but boy, it's interesting gameplay wise.
Mm.
So all of your immortal characters are kind of blank slates, and that they can learn just about any ability from a mortal character that is available. So you have a lot of customization options. I had pretty much turned my Kaim into a black mage. A little bit physical, a little bit black magey, and then turned Seth into a white mage because she, no matter what, would always move first.
Speed.
At least that was a little bit. Yeah, that was a little bit early game. Kaim was still kind of tanky, but he would also cast spells on occasion. Mm-hmm. Though to be fair, I think Jansen is actually your best magic user.
Yeah.
But the customization of all of your immortal characters was just kind of fascinating to me. And then at the end game, when you get the last two characters, Seth's son and the prince.
Red. Yeah.
Are we there already? Yeah.
Those two guys had some abilities that were game breaking. Because the pirate character, what's his name again?
Seth.
Try to say that 5 times.
Yeah,
fast.
Yeah.
But he had a lot of the boosty stuff that you could do, like double XP, double SP, double gold. If you could get through the game and get him, grinding's a breeze at that point. And then the prince had a lot of the abilities that were like kind of more battle focused that were pretty game breaking too.
Yeah, I think the prince might have been my least favorite. That's one I feel like they could have done without. I wasn't even 100% sure I remembered him as being a playable character until I like looked it up earlier.
Yeah, Tolton just he exists.
Well, he exists like, for like story like, reasons.
I get why he's there. It's just
because he's the puppet that can be controlled by Gangora. Yeah. Like that, and that's fine. I didn't feel like I wanted him in my party after that, because he's a little bit of a wet blanket.
Yeah, he's honestly kind of, I don't know how to describe him.
He fits in great with Kaim then. No, that's an insult.
Mr. Generic Jr.
He doesn't really have an established like role in the party, and he doesn't have a like a emotional connection to anybody. Like every character in that party, minus Jansen, but by then he, you know, he's connected enough. Every party character has basically family bond. It is like one big family, is it not? Or two families in a sense. Kaim's family and Seth's family.
Basically, because I'm gonna call them Palom and Porom.
Palom and Porom 2.0.
Cook and Mac are Kain's grandchildren.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which that was extremely cool. It's one of the rare cases where like the child characters aren't exclusively annoying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they can be.
I mean, they can be, but at least makes sense. They're like that.
It feels more genuine when they're annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you're not annoying because you're just an annoying character. You're annoying because you're kids. And
yeah.
Given that one of them is voiced by an actual Rugrat. Yeah.
Who is it? Angelica?
No.
Her voice sounds so familiar. Oh my God.
I don't know.
Phil and Lil. Same voice actress that does Phil and Will.
All right.
Yeah, that's Kate Susie.
I can't remember her name, but yeah, I recognize that voice almost immediately.
Yeah.
And little Seth
off,
is...
Little sorry. Off topic, since you mentioned Rugrats, I gotta throw this in. One of the Angelica, I think, the actress that does Angelica is in like one of the Rob Zombie horror movies from the last couple of years.
Really?
Yeah. And she portrays like a very dirty sex worker and I think she puts on that voice and it's just what?
Yeah. So anyway. Kath Susie is Cook, and if you've watched a cartoon in the past 20 years, you've heard Kath Susie 30 in years. Some.
Oh point. Yeah.
Well, yeah, just so long.
And video. Oh. She's in a ton of video games too. I know. Mm-hmm. I see her name all the time, or used to anyway.
I know her best as Princess Sally from the Sonic cartoon because I watched the crap out of that. But another voice actress alumni is Tara Strong as Seth. And I recognized her immediately because you know it's Riku from 10-2.
Yeah, Riku from Final Fantasy 10.
Kaim is Bosch von Roskenberg of Dalmasca.
Yes. God, yes.
Wait, the guy who is Bosch or the guy who runs around telling everybody that
he is
Bosch?
The guy who is Bosch.
Yeah.
The guy who is Bosch.
He's also been in a bunch of cartoons.
Yes.
You might know him as Blue from Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends.
I mean, I know him as Bosch. You got it on the first try there.
Okay. But what got to me the most and what surprised me is that Jansen's voice actor has just kind of did this game and then played Knuckles in Sonic Adventure and then just disappeared.
Oh, really?
That's a shame.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jansen's awesome. And
how could that be possible? He's so good.
I know. It's a shame because he is really talented and I think he was easily the best character.
And he has a funny delivery, good like comedic timing.
Yeah.
Knows. Yes. He makes a lot of scenes, especially early on, I think, stand out. Yeah. Once you get to the Mac and Cook bit, once they get introduced, and isn't that, I think that's one of Kaim's like first big revelations, isn't it? Because he I think he does have the vision of like his daughter at some point. Something I don't even know if he knows what it was, but something happened to his daughter. And then when you meet Mac and Cook, and they introduce him to their mother, and he has that. They have that mutual moment where they look at each other and they realize, oh, you're my father, you're my daughter, and then she dies. And he loses his daughter. He gets reunited with her, then loses her immediately, and Mac and Cook lose their mother. It's hard to like think of like how can you be more devastating?
Yeah.
It's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it's a lot.
And that for Kaim, like, because I know the whole point of, I think he even says that at one point, something, you know, to the effect of like, I don't even want my memories back. They give me nothing but pain.
Yeah.
So in a life like full of pain, and then he finally finds his daughter again and dead.
And that funeral scene that you go through was pretty heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
Mm. They kind of gamify it a little bit because you've got to gather all of the flowers around the town, and then you have to do sort of a mini game where you have to lower the torch to each character that runs by. But then the cutscene that plays is like, oh my god, my allergies. Why? Mm.
I guess you could say at least he met her, because later you find his wife, her mother, and she did not even get to meet her daughter again, even just briefly.
Yeah, Sarah feels pretty underleveled by the time you get her. I had never used her that much, unless I had to, because they split up the party towards the end of the game.
Yeah, it's I don't know how many other games like play with the theme of fatherhood that much.
It's really especially as grandfather even,
right? But to Mac and Cook, might as well just be, I mean, he's the right age to be their father, and
I think
accept him right away, and the theme of family, I guess, as a whole, because when Sarah joins, then she's now, you know, those are her grandkids, and like they literally have a little family that has just like kind of formed up. And I'm trying so hard not to mention the other one until like there's a moment to speak about him in detail. Said.
What, Said being Seth's?
Yeah, Seth's son.
Yeah, I still don't really know how I feel about that. First of all, he joins so late, which is a little bit of a shame, I think, because I do think that's a cool like development. Oh, that's like, it's the oldest party member by a long shot, and he's her son.
I love that. Seth still looks young, and her son looks really old. That's
great. But they immediately act like grown mother, child, son. Like he runs up to her. I think she pats his head or hugs him or whatever it is. Like it's equally a little silly, but also heartwarming. That's what I mean. I can't like really decide how I feel about it. Is it too silly or is it like awesome? It's probably both. I don't know.
It's kind of adorable, honestly.
It is adorable. Like, and the way she just like embraces him right away. Like that's just so cool.
A little bit adorable, a little bit creepy, because grown men that call people mommy.
Yeah, true.
Bugs me just like, a tad.
What is this, Yakuza? No, for sure. But it is really nice that they did decide to do that, because it adds a really nice sting, like a jab to the heart to the ending.
Mm-hmm.
Because Seth basically sacrifices herself, more or less. I don't think it's confirmed that she dies, but
yeah,
since there's never been a sequel.
It's kind of treated like she died, because the way time works in their world is different.
Well, it's slower.
Yeah, because
so she could still be very. I think she could still be alive.
Yeah, because I think the way it works is a year in their realm is the equivalent of 1,000 years in the mortal realm.
Yeah, so she could like just like nobody else is aging. The other immortals continue to live, and she could too.
Hmm.
But I mean, you have to watch her disappearing as like reflected on her aged son's face as he watches her go through the portal, like jump through the portal.
Yeah.
So that is it's kind of heartbreaking. So another one, and see another, like I found my mother and now she's gone. So there's like, those are, I don't know, those are things I probably don't see in a lot of games at all.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
This game wasn't afraid to tug at your heartstrings, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy that I played it, because it was one of the first RPGs in a long time that was kind of hitting me right in the feels. But man, I didn't think I was going to get to that point, because I think the game has a very rough start.
Mm. So what turned it around for you?
Getting Mac and Cook and actually having more than like a full party and being able to kind of customize my characters more and not die. I think the first two bosses in this game are tuned way too hard for how early they show up in the game.
Yeah, that first boss in particular, like I was like almost ready to give up my replay completely.
The Griffin in the Mountains was pretty tough, but then the next boss with the kind of bug that keeps spawning other bugs about Brookby.
That one wasn't as hard, but yeah, it's still pretty rough.
I struggled with that one, and I had to look up a guide and didn't realize that at that point, Jansen could learn a multi-heal spell, which kind of helped. But if you can't handle those bugs properly, then you're just screwed, because they keep spawn. The more they spawn and the more they explode, the more trouble they cause for you.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody else had that issue.
I don't remember particular boss. It's when they're giving me a hard time.
It's that boss when they're at Grand Staff or whatever that area was
in the desert.
No,
Grand Staff's like in the ocean.
Yeah.
No, I might have struggled. I don't remember. I couldn't have struggled that much because I don't remember particularly being frustrated at any sections. I don't know. I wonder why that is. Because I hear that a lot. The first couple of bosses. That's what I hear from everybody.
Yeah. The griffin in the mountains and those worm things at Grand Staff.
I definitely remember getting stuck at one of those for a while.
Yeah.
So at that point, I had pretty much dug out my paper strategy guide and was reading through it, which is really funny because the text didn't age well with that, and I had trouble seeing it. I had to go. I had to buy a magnifying light just to be able to read that guide.
What is it, like a Brady Games book?
Yeah, it's either Brady or Prima. I honestly can't remember.
I don't think I've ever seen the one for Lost Odyssey.
Yeah, I found it in a used bookstore a long time ago, and I sort of collect RPG strategy guides, so it's like, well, I get that way if I play this one eventually. And it definitely came in handy, especially towards the end of the game where you start getting into all of the collectibles.
Do you ever just take a strategy guide and just like kind of look through it, even if you're not planning on playing the game, just to reminisce, I guess?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I do it all the time.
That's great.
For Backtrack, I'll even pull a strategy guide out just to kind of refresh my memory if I have it.
Mm-hmm. I had, back in college, I used to buy a strategy guide. It's the same thing as what you're describing. And then for years, they were, you know, during a move, packed up somewhere. I honestly had not seen them in a long time in some box or another. I assumed I didn't have them anymore, and it was a great day when one day I did open a box and it was just all my strategy guides in there. So they've lived on the shelf since then.
I rather hate that when you're moving, strategy guides turn into dark matter. Yeah, those things get heavy when you put them in boxes. and I've had my hardback ones break a couple of bookcases because they were so heavy.
I believe it.
But I thought it was kind of interesting doing a Final Fantasy or playing what was essentially a Final Fantasy game, and it doing the Final Fantasy thing where once you get the airship, you have to run around and collect stuff.
Yeah, Lost Odyssey gives you all that good Final Fantasy stuff.
Good and bad.
Well, that's fair.
there was like a bunch of hidden treasure points that you could find if you got a certain item, and a lot of those hidden treasure points had some of the best items in the game. And there was another mini game where you had to hit boxes in a certain order to play music. I don't know if you guys had messed with that at all.
No.
Maybe 20 years ago, Kelly, don't know.
Yeah, I was doing some of that stuff just so that I could be prepared for whatever the game threw at me at the end game.
Yeah.
And I also remember the kind of the end dungeon that was basically, what was it, the Grand Staff? It was basically Grand Staff reskinned. I got so lost in that dungeon.
I think I got lost in a lot of dungeons in this game.
That one in particular was pretty brutal because of how many, there was like elevators and different screens, and I didn't want to miss any of the treasure chests because those had some pretty cool in-game items.
I think I remember a dungeon when Mac runs off and you have to chase him into the jungle ruins or something like that.
Yeah.
And it always reminds me of the first dungeon in Trails in the Sky. Like there's a, I think it's because in Trails in the Sky, I've only ever, I think, played the first dungeon.
What is the first dungeon in Trails in the Sky?
It's one that is a little bit like the jungle ruins from Lost Odyssey. I don't know. I do think it's kind of similar. it's some kind of a, maybe it even is a jungle too. It's a temple located in a area with trees maybe. And you have to go through, and I think there's floating platforms. I don't know how much I'm like turning one game into the other one in my head right now. They always remind me of each those two dungeons. Because I think I've started Trails in the Sky like 3 times, and I always play the first dungeon and then I kind of quit.
Probably just wait for the new remake at this point.
That is kind of what the plan is at this point. Yeah, we tried on console. Let's see if that works. I won't, because you know what? Trails in the Sky is what I'm waiting to play, so I can eventually go back to Trails of Cold Steel.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you were with us for one and two?
Yeah, well, I've played the first two, and this is where I think it was on RP Gamer. I saw, this is a good place to pause that series and do the Trails in the Sky. I figured I might as well. And with the remake coming out to consoles, is it this year? Is it this next year? I think it is.
I think it's next year, yeah.
I figured I might as well wait for that. Why not? I mean, it'll still be 4 more years before I play it, I'm sure.
Well, but maybe you should write a most anticipated column about that.
Oh, Is it? I think you've just heard all my anticipation. That was about it.
You only need like 5 or 6 sentences. We don't put much in our anticipated looking forward. Can't
wait for it features. Because it has a dungeon like that Lost Odyssey dungeon.
Exactly. Right there, you've got the hook.
Have you ever played Lost right Odyssey? There. Remember that one dungeon? Now you know why I'm looking forward to Trails in the Sky.
There you go. I've enjoyed Cold Steel 1 and 2. I really want to push forward into the rest of the series, but I feel like I need to, experience where it began.
Yeah. It's a sickness. I feel like I have to do it right. I have to play them in the right order.
Oh, I remember your Yakuza phase.
My face?
Phase.
Oh. What's my Yakuza phase?
Oh, man, I remember hearing you on, you've talked on Backtrack about a couple of them. But there was a few that you were on RPG Cast going through the series talking about
playing them in the right order.
Yep.
Well, that's one thing we don't have to worry about with Lost Odyssey.
Yeah,
I mean, it does have that going for it. It's a one and done.
I mean, it's nice that it's a one and done. It's just a shame that it didn't catch on more because not a lot of JRPG people owned Xboxes back then and certainly weren't willing to buy an Xbox just for that game.
Yeah.
And
just the JRPG people who happen to already have a 360.
I mean, it's true that nowadays it's a lot less like exclusivity like that doesn't exist, I don't think, with a lot of games. But
yeah,
if I think back to early mid 90s, like cartridge consoles, think about Nintendo, Sega. I mean, if you were a Sega kid, then you never got those many Nintendo games and vice versa, and that was just it. Like,
yeah,
it was, you have a Sega and you play him, or you don't, and then you never will. So there you go. Lost Odyssey is a throwback in many ways.
I was lucky enough that I moved in with my then boyfriend, now husband, who had bought a 360 so that he could play GTA. And I would just peruse the used game section and be like, even before I moved in with him, I was like, here, I'll play these 360 games while I'm hanging out with you.
Yeah. Which one? 4 or 5?
Which one? 4. Did I say 5?
You didn't say.
Okay. Yeah, it was 4 that came out because we were playing it together when he got it the day one.
Nico. Nico.
But yeah, I would just pick up 360 games on the cheap, keep them at his house, and then when I eventually moved in, one of the first things I played through was Tales of Vesperia, and I kept trying to boot this one up to get into it, but just
with creepy man chest.
For some reason could not get into this one back then.
What, Lost Odyssey?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know what we haven't talked about?
What?
Like, one of the best things, Uematsu did the music. Or maybe we didn't talk about that, actually. Can't remember if we did.
I briefly mentioned it, saying that it was, when I was talking about Fantasian being kind of his last game, that he was going to do the full music for. But the music in this game was pretty awesome. It definitely had that Uematsu flavor to it.
Yeah.
It did. What I liked a lot about it is it didn't sound like any of his Final Fantasy stuff. It had its own distinct style to it for the most part.
Yeah.
Ooh, what do you mean?
I mean, you listen to some of his Final Fantasy soundtracks and some of them can kind of blend together. It's like, I don't know which game this is from. I know this is a Uematsu Final Fantasy track.
Okay.
I feel like I can sort of tell the difference. Like I can tell the difference between his 7 tracks and his 8 tracks.
But is that because you know those games, or because they're stylistically different? I'm just asking. Like, I don't remember.
I think there's some stylistic differences.
Yes, I don't. I don't think Lost Odyssey is... It's definitely not my favorite Uematsu soundtrack. Like, I think on the whole, like, Final Fantasy 6 or 7 would be my favorite.
Yeah, I think 7's absolutely most iconic score.
I think I'm with you. 7 might get it. Actually, you know what? It depends on what day you ask me.
It really
goes back and forth.
Seven's definitely the nostalgia one for me, so...
Right. Yeah, we know. You were, like, very young. My nostalgia reaches back to 6 as well. but I was going to say, so it's not my favorite soundtrack, but it does have in it my, like, hands down, my favorite single Uematsu song that he's ever written.
Huh. Which one?
I've seen it called different things, because I guess sometimes, like, soundtrack songs get the title. Get retranslated in different ways, but the best I can find right now is A Sign of Hope. And I like a lot of songs he's written in other games, like Celis's theme or
the boss theme in Blue Dragon.
Oh god, no. Or just any
oh god, yes. Yeah. I have that in my regular playlist.
am I recreating that pretty accurately?
Yeah.
Oh god,
I'd bust out the lyrics, but I'm just going to butcher them. I just know the course is something, something eternity.
Oh, so bad.
It's the best. You mean it's the best.
Sung by the legendary lead singer of Deep Purple.
Yeah.
Purple. That would be fine if you sang it once. I don't need to hear it on repeat. I think that was the song that made me despise game songs with vocals. Something else we talked about during the Cold Steel 2 podcast like a year or two ago. I hate when they have vocals in repeating game track.
Ian Gillan.
That sounds like the right name. Listen. All right.
If you don't like that, you're not going to like a lot of the Metaphor soundtrack then.
Great.
Though that's more like chanting vocals.
That sounds like it could get annoying in a different sort of way then.
It's more like you'll be too shocked at what is going on, what is entering your ears to be annoyed that it's a vocal.
Okay. I don't know if that's better.
Just after this, just go look up the battle theme for Metaphor, please. And then tell us your reaction, please.
God. I'll try that. But yeah, that Uematsu song gives me the chills if I hear it now. It's so good.
We'll have to be sure to include it in our musical interludes.
He kind of outdid himself, but yeah, I don't remember too much of the rest of the soundtrack.
There's a touching piano piece that plays a lot during a lot of the sadder moments in the story. Yeah. That's really good.
Yeah, I think you might be talking about the one I'm referring to.
Probably. I don't know the name of it. So
yeah, it's a really good piece.
Yeah.
And I like the kind of, I don't know what you would call it, like calming music that played during the memories. The
visual novel. Yeah.
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 Yeah. It's that synergy of the music and the stories together, to be fair. I mean, I know we've already talked about how good the stories are, but the music is so much a part of it, too.
It's got a really good, standard battle theme, too. I think I got annoyed with it after a while. But on its own, it's very good.
Yeah.
I just think any kind of game like this where you're in combat a lot, just if they don't change up the combat theme, it can just grate on you sometimes, regardless of the quality. It's that's happened to me in some Final Fantasy games. Those all have really good battle themes.
I didn't even get into the pricing. So you can still find this on the Xbox store for $25. And it runs it runs on your modern Xboxes.
Yep.
If you are a physical person, well, good luck trying to find a copy with all 4 discs.
You don't need them. I think if you put in any disc, it will just download the whole game and you can just play it. Don't quote me on that. It may only be disc one. I think it's possible. I think it might be any disc.
I installed the game so that it would run a little bit faster, and it still made me get up and change discs.
What? Is it just because the game is programmed to have a prompt for you to do that?
I don't think it installs everything on the 360 version. Yeah, Xbox Xbox One or Xbox One, Xbox Series, you never have to use more than one disc. Because that's how the backwards compatibility works. It,
like, yeah.
It just downloads an updated version of the game.
Kelly, I thought that's what you were playing.
I was playing this old school on a 360.
Well, yeah. Well, of course. I'm not too surprised.
Remember?
It's not an OG 360, is it?
It was the updated model that had the built-in Wi-Fi.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Funny story about picking up that 360. I bought that at a GameStop because I wanted a 360 to be able to play all these RPGs that I had picked up. And the dude bro that's behind the counter is like, man, you don't want one of those old systems. You want the new system. And I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure I just want the old system.
The one with no disk drive. Got to do it.
And I was like, the more he was trying to upsell me on an Xbox One, the more irritated I was getting.
I felt like this
360 is 359 numbers higher. Why would I want an Xbox One?
This story would not be out of place out of those like forum posts you see about how like GameStop employees or whatever are terrible or whatever.
And it's my guy. The reason why I am buying an old system is because I'm using it to play old games, and I don't want to spend a lot of money on this.
Mm. Sounds like you need to address him with like, son, because we're old.
I was very irritated. That day, even my husband was like, "Wow, that guy really wanted you to buy an Xbox One." Sorry to disappoint.
You know, it won't be long before the next generation. Just like now, teenagers don't know how like rotary phone works or cassette player. They won't know how to operate a disk drive on a game system at some point. Be like, "What is this? What this?" Why is there a CD in? They won't even know what that is, to be fair. Why is the shiny thing in here?
Why is this TV so bulky and box like?
Yeah.
Why can't I disconnect this system from the TV and play it on the go? What is this? Let me think about it. We're going to have a whole generation of Switch kids.
Yes.
That doesn't stay a thing. It's going to be weird.
So yeah, I would highly recommend picking up this game if you have a chance. It is very good. You just you're going to need a guide for the first hour or so. You'll have to grind a little bit to get past those first two bosses, but once you get like the
You kind of can't grind that much in this game because of the way XP works.
I mostly grinded money so that I could buy enough healing items to get through.
Okay, yeah, I get it.
But once you get the 5 party members, and I think it really picks up once Mac learns the shadow magic.
Hmm.
He can kind of pick off people, kind of like pick off the stragglers when you hit physically and do an AoE magic with Jensen. I guess one of my major issues with the combat system in this game was that like trying to channel high level magic just seemed like a waste of time since it took 2 turns to charge. and especially with some of those fights where you're fighting like 5 different soldiers at once and the healers in the back row trying to take out first, keep healing the rest. Slightly annoying. Anyway, I think we're ready for the round table unless anybody has anything else they want to add.
This game needs to be remastered.
I think so. It needs a remaster. It needs a fast forward button.
At least some kind of re-release.
Would you replay Switch?
So you would replay Switch.
If it had more quality of life features like a quick save and being able to fast forward battles, yeah, I would replay it.
I don't know if I would. I'd be curious, like if that ever came to pass, then maybe I would listen to some other people that had already played it. Let me know if it was worth replaying. I feel like it wouldn't have the same impact the second time around for me. Just for knowing what happens already. I mean, like I'm enjoying the reminiscence of it, you know, enough already, so that I'm not so sure that a replay would give me a lot extra. But I think it would take, you know, a lot of time. And as good as the visual novel parts were, like replaying it and rereading those, I'm not so sure that I would want to, like, just for the time investment. I think it's good. I think it's great for like a first play. I'm not so sure replay would work for me.
Yeah.
But it would be nice to just give other people a chance for sure. I'm not so sure for me.
Yeah. It can be hard to justify replaying these long games.
It can be.
Yeah.
If I love them enough, I certainly do. But yeah.
I sure did replay Final Fantasy 13 for this, so there you go.
This represents, like, this is probably more of a roundtable answer, but like, this does represent something to me by virtue of, you know, it's Sakaguchi, and it's, you know, in my mind, that means it's Final Fantasy, and it's like part of my, well, God, I know how this sounds, but I'm not going to say get off my lawn, but it's part of my childhood, and that kind of, and so by extension, this game connects to that. And for that, I wish everybody could, you know, replay it on a more modern system, and that would be amazing. Like, I wanted to get that. And that's apart from the fact that it's just really good already. But I mean, it kind of has I guess I have a soft spot for it for that reason. Now turn down that music.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah, that too. You shouldn't even be on there.
Well, we'll get off your lawn and go have a brief musical interlude with one of the fabulous Sakaguchi songs from this game, and then come back.
Uematsu. Turn up that music.
Sorry. All the way up. Uematsu, you're right. Not Sakaguchi. Sakaguchi. I am tired. We'll be right back. Welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are now getting into the roundtable, our personal thoughts, our feelings, our what we loved about this game. That being said, what was you guys' favorite moment?
Despite it being incredibly brutal, the funeral.
Yeah, that's a really good scene.
I can't think of another game that does something like that as well as this game does. But yeah, favorite, but also you'll be wrecked emotionally by the end of it. Very well done.
For me, it was when Jansen and Queen Meng saved.
It's Ming. I'm pretty sure it's Ming.
The queen.
Yeah.
they save Kaim and Sarah from a block of ice towards the end of the game, and Jansen just gives Kaim a big old hug. Aww. And Kaim's kind of annoyed by it, and Jansen goes, "Oh, I missed you too, buddy." It was just such at on what could have been a touching moment. I thought it was adorable, and it's what made me love Jansen the best.
There's also like a few moments a little bit before that is the part where Jansen and Ming find the kids like passed out on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like there's not an embrace, but it's the same like they both do. But like Jansen rushes over and like bends over and is concerned, and like it's so familial. I want him to be like part of my extended family.
Oh, I mean, he marries the queen at the end. Maybe he has kids. I don't know.
That could have been in the sequel. Sad face.
Did everybody say their favorite moment?
I haven't gone yet. That part in just three where like the characters are like separated, and there's this one scene where the kind of pretty cheesy Sheena Easton ballad plays, and then for several minutes, and then it just transitions to Jansen singing it while he's walking up to Ming, like passed out.
I forgot about the Sheena Easton ballad because I'm listening to that and I'm thinking, wait, did they get the same chick that sang Eyes on Me to do this? Because it sounded so much like it.
No, that's the Eyes on Me is Fei Wong.
Yeah. And then listening to it, it's like, wait, Sheena Easton? Why do I, and I'm thinking, like, why do I know that name? Because even though I'm a music buff, I don't really know, like, singers. I guess Sheena Easton is a somewhat famous singer in the United States.
She was kind of popular in the 80s.
See, that's what I thought.
Yeah, I think she did some vocals on a Prince song that one time. Yeah, actually, she collaborated with Prince a couple times.
But then the in-game character is singing it?
Yes. Yeah, it literally transitions to Jansen just singing it.
That's awesome.
That's yes.
Really cool. I don't remember that.
Oh, I definitely remember it.
Now, I have a feeling we're all going to have the same answer to this, so don't all answer at once.
But I bet I know what the question is.
Who is our favorite character?
Jansen.
Jansen.
Probably Jansen for me, too. I think I already said he was. I want to throw in an honorable mention. No, it's hard to pick one, though. It's hard to pick, like, one other one to mention.
Yeah.
If you say more than one, you're kind of opening the floodgates. I have a little bit of affinity for Sed. I already kind of went into it. But that whole old man / little boy at heart mentality kind of grew on me.
Yeah.
And he's a pirate, so that makes it even cooler.
Yeah.
I mean... Aside from the mommy thing, he was kind of cool, especially when you can use him to fix devices all around the world to get good stuff.
You know what, though? If I haven't seen my mom his whole life, did they ever explain how long it's been? A long time for sure. Then
decades.
I hope I'll get, yeah. I hope that I'll, and I'm, you know, if I'm assuming she's maybe not even around anymore, then I would hope I'll get the chance to call her mommy again too. So I don't even blame him.
Yeah,
that is okay.
Yeah, I don't know, just in this game it just seems less corny than it probably should.
Yeah,
no, I get it. I mean, he's kind of a little kid at heart. It just something about that with grown men kind of bothers me.
I think it's adorable because he's such a, I think it's because he's such an old man, so it actually just feels adorable somehow. Like, if it was, like, some guy in his 30s, that'd just be weird.
You guys have been playing too much Yakuza.
I have not yet been playing too much Yakuza. It's coming next year.
I need to finish Yakuza 7, actually.
But did you guys have a particular favorite memory that you liked hearing?
Wait, is this the, like, how did we feel while we were playing it question?
No. This is I should have worded this better. Your favorite 1,000 years of memory.
Oh man.
I mentioned it before, but I like the story about the earthquake, about how Kaim has, like, this family in this village, and everyone dies from this awful earthquake.
Yeah.
And he comes back over the years, and they have, like, this remembrance ceremony, and eventually so much time passes that people don't even know why they're having it anymore. I just thought that was really touching.
Wow.
Interesting. Yeah. That's one thing a lot of those little stories do, is just, it's hard to fathom, like, the amounts of time these characters have been alive. Mm. I think they kind of do a good job of touching on that. They're all so good.
Yeah, because one of my favorite ones was one where Kaim had ended up in prison.
What is it? Tell it.
I'm trying to do the gist of it, but, like, they were locked in, like, all of these, like, individual cells, and it was pitch black. And you'd hear the new prisoner screaming until they basically, like, killed themselves by bashing themselves on the head, just so that they could end their suffering. And then realizing that Kaim kind of has no way to end his suffering, and that it's possible that he could be in this prison for a long time.
Wow.
But then old revolutionary says, don't give up hope, and breaks everybody out. Or no, the revolutionary's men breaks everybody out. Mm. Just the way that story was described. Kind of put me there and made me definitely feel the hopelessness of being in the prison.
Yeah.
It was a very interesting story.
Yeah.
Isn't it kind of cool that their immortality is such a burden? And is it ever, it may never even be looked upon, like, in a favorable light.
I'm hard pressed to think of games that do, or media that does look at it
I think Lost Odyssey was like the first media anything that like where it like explored the idea of like how like, oh yeah, living forever actually wouldn't be that great.
It's very like Tuck Everlasting kind of.
Yeah.
I don't know why that's the first thing my mind goes to.
Tuck Everlasting.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Queen said it in Highlander already. Mm-hmm. Who wants to live forever? Nobody is going to think the answer. But I was actually going to point this out. It's a little bit of a like a plot hole, because with all their immortality, like they can't even die in battle. If they fall in battle, they just resurrect like a couple of turns later. They come back to life, but only the immortal characters. Mm-hmm. And I think they do make a big deal about Kine, like at the beginning of the story, on that battlefield, like that opening cinematic. And then the meteor falls and he just, you know, walks out because he's immortal. It doesn't like bother him. And I think there's something in the final boss fight against Gongora where he says something to the same effect, like, there's no point in fighting you guys because you're immortal anyway. So what's the use? So he just kind of goes after the mortals. But that's a little bit of a plot point, a plot hole, because the way they explain their immortality at the end, it's just time passes slower for them. They're perceived as immortal because in their own dimension, time just goes at a different speed. So why are they impervious to death and damage?
Mm.
That doesn't actually make sense. Should be able to die when a meteor hits you.
Maybe the I don't know. I'm just
I really have to wonder if Sakaguchi was kind of struggling with the con. If he was struggling with
explaining
how to best utilize some of these ideas.
Yeah,
because when I hear immortal, I think cannot die.
Right, like can't even be hurt. Or you know, at least injured to the point where you die.
Yeah.
But wait, how does your body know if? Wait, so you can't cut yourself while shaving? There's no injury at all. Does your body know where the line is drawn between? Well, I mean, not that that's this game's fault. Like that's just an argument you could have about anything. But
can you shave at all, or is your hair indestructible?
Immortal.
And do you just turn into a giant hairball?
Or you know, it's Wolverine / Deadpool immortality to where you just regenerate really fast.
Yeah, just healing factor. Honestly, I think that's the easiest way to do it.
I think so.
Yeah, hearing you guys like share those the thousand years of dreams, is that what they're called? I don't know if I'd replay the game, but what I would love to watch is somebody with you know, a very good speaker narrate those. If there's a recording of that somewhere.
There are a bunch of them on YouTube, though. Some of the narrators that do that are better than others. Ooh. I was listening to one of them today that was doing a Let's Play that was kind of okay, but it was the only way I could really find voiced ones. So your mileage may vary on that.
It's worth a try, though, because that would be a way I would want to experience them. Just listen. I can't remember one particular one anymore to point at a favorite, but I do kind of recall that, like, even the ones that started in a way of like, I don't know how this is going to, you know, resonate with me. This sounds like it's going to kind of miss me. And then even those stories would eventually reach a point where they kind of won me over and like, oh, yeah, I got this one hit me in the feels. I didn't think it would. I think all or most them were kind of like that.
Yeah, I felt like most of the ones that I got to, because unfortunately I didn't have time to listen to all of them. But most of the ones that I got to at least kind of started out simple and then had a bit of a twist at the end. Not like an M. Night Shyamalan twist, but you know, just kind of were written in a way that they didn't end how you would expect them to.
So did Kime's daughter become a pop star? And was there a whole story about trying to start her pop star career?
No, nothing
like
that.
Like a movie that's currently out?
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
No, nothing like that. just more kind of like, oh, that was nice kind of storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think definitely achieved the goal of like mature storytelling, while keeping it very, I don't know, classy. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't degrade into like adult themes for the sake of being crass or anything like that.
Yeah, no, just very good stories. So my final question, as always, do you have, especially you, Pascal, I know you have particular memories while you was playing this, and you, Ryan, since you played this in high school.
Oh, I have some memories. not good ones.
I don't, because I played this year, my memories were nearly rage quitting it live on RPG Cast. I was like, oh my god, this game is killing me.
You think that's just because of the age of the game? Like, design has changed a little bit, maybe.
Going back
to... Or that Kelly's not immortal.
Yeah, Kelly's not immortal. Going back to that kind of old school game design of you're not just breezing through fights and you've got to hunt for a save point every night before you go to bed.
Yeah, I have lots of very fond memories. I mean, I was lucky that this was when I was moving over for a few years to just be an Xbox guy. After the PS2, I was Xbox 360 only for quite a few years. So that was perfect for that. You know, Blue Dragon and this came out, and I knew about the Sakaguchi and Final Fantasy connection. And this was, since we're not talking about Blue Dragon, but like same story there in a way. I love turn-based. This gave me what I wanted. This was, you know, I said it earlier, this was all the old stuff that I wanted. A little bit grindy, turn-based, and then all the like great character storytelling in it, the music. Yeah. This was the Final Fantasy that I did not get after that, and that I still haven't gotten to now. Because prior to that, Final Fantasy would have been where I would have expected those things to come from. And so this was my Final Fantasy whatever. You know, 11 or 12 or 13, I guess 13, because, you know, 12, I didn't hate 12 or anything like that. And yeah, it's great. It also came at a time in my life when I had less responsibility, I guess, in a way. So it kind of wasn't dragged down by like negative life influences at the time. I don't think I ever had the Red Ring of Death during playing this game. So I was free from that too. Yeah, oh, it was great. It's like the perfect like storm to play that game during.
Yeah, it seemed like kind of the changing of the guard in a way, going from a very... I felt like this would have been at home on the PS2.
Graphically, though? I don't know.
Well, graphically, it seemed like a good midpoint between PS2 and PS3.
I think I was pretty impressed by the graphics at the time. Like the
I was, too.
The environments, like the cities, they were like very... It's been so long, so I don't want to misrepresent it, but that's the way I remember it anyway. That I was like, oh man, look at it. It's so stylishly very different, and you know, it's got so many moving parts.
I mean, wasn't it mostly 3D models on pre-rendered backgrounds?
I don't know.
I don't think there was a lot of 3D in this game, but I liked it.
It's fully 3D. It just has fixed camera. It's just that the camera is fixed, basically.
Okay, that makes sense. But yeah, I think it was a good transition between the old guard and the new guard, because I noticed that RPGs really haven't been the same since.
Yeah, I would say I'm surprised that, I mean, I understand the reasons why it didn't sell better. So all the more shame that it, you know, the company like kind of changed gears to mobile games after, and there's not been a sequel, and it wasn't a big seller, and yada, yada, everything we've already said, like it, by all rights, this should have been a very different story that we'd be telling right now.
Mm-hmm. I think it sold fine enough. I think just the problem it sold like niche numbers, and they were probably looking for like Final Fantasy numbers, I would assume.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it sold pretty well. It didn't sell badly. I remember it was actually considered a big deal when it was like in the best selling games of the month on, I think it sold like 200,000 copies in its first month in America or something.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't a bomb. I just don't, I don't think it was like, we're ready to bankroll a bunch of sequels to this.
Yeah, Microsoft definitely put some marketing muscle behind it. The one commercial where it's set to White Rabbit.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, I never saw that one.
About that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely saw that on TV a few times.
White Rabbit?
Huh.
That song by Jefferson Airplane?
Yeah.
I'm not aware of that either.
One pill makes you taller and one pill makes you small, and the ones that mother gives you don't do anything at all.
Okay, and this has to do with the game?
Yeah.
What?
I don't know why they did that song.
I
think it just works.
Yeah, it kind of actually works.
Kind of fantasy game.
Yeah. Well, they were definitely trying to sell it as like, oh, this a serious JRPG for the grown-ups, basically.
Hold on, I found the commercial. I'm going to send it.
It kind of is. Can you imagine a kid trying to play this and get something out of it?
No.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I played this when I was like 15. I did get something out of this, but that's just because I really love the idea of, oh, this is for the adults. Yes.
Wiz, did you say your memories?
No, this is going to be this is going to be a lot. So while everyone else got Red Rings of Death with their Xboxes, I got something totally different. Anyone want to take a guess as to what?
Because
you'll never guess.
I'm is afraid it related to guess. To the
Xbox? I just want to say you get, STDs, but...
Yeah, I was already thinking that.
Yes, yes. My 360 gave me herpes. No, something was wrong with the disk drive, so it started scratching discs.
Oh.
So, brutal. And it scratched, I think, Assassin's Creed, and that didn't work anymore, and Disc 2 of Lost Odyssey. So that led me to a kit Lost in an Odyssey with Xbox Tech Support, and boy, was that an experience. Like, the first call, I think I had to talk to multiple people and finally got someone to understand my problem, at which point they informed me that I would have to call back another day because their systems were down, you know. Something normally you would have told me like at the start of the conversation instead of having to go through everything. So after the second tech support call, where I think I also had to talk to multiple people to finally get someone to understand the issue and started setting up the repair, I asked about getting my game replaced because obviously Lost Odyssey published by Microsoft. So I asked about getting that replaced. And after a long hold, they came back and informed me I would have to talk to the publisher of the game, but they could send me, what the hell did they say to me? I think they said Halo or the racing game were my options. Not the name of the racing game.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the racing game. At which point I had to be, I mean, I guess I had a reason to be annoying, but I had to ask for a manager and just be like, you are the publisher of this game. Can you please replace my discs? Eventually that got solved. I sent in my 360. They probably just sent me out another one. And I luckily did not have any issues after that until years later when a power supply on another 360 melted. But that didn't destroy any four-disc JRPGs. But yeah, I always think of that whole incident when I think of this game because it it obviously like interrupted playing this game because I had to wait for all this nonsense to be resolved. But yeah, just because it wasn't, I couldn't get the nice easy Red Ring of Death and just my 360 dies and that's it. I had to be some other weird issue where it's destroying discs and then I have to get those replaced too. And I think I lucked out and I was able, I think this was shortly after Assassin's Creed came out, so I was able to like return it to the store and be like, hey, look, my game came damaged.
Did you get a new Assassin's Creed?
Yeah, I did. Not from Microsoft, but yes. Yeah, that's all my biggest memory with this game is just...
It all sounds awful.
Yeah, it was not good. Mm-hmm. Because especially after that, you're like, well, I have to wait until I can send this thing out. Do I actually play anything on this? I think I had to bust out. I still had the OG Xbox. I think I had to pull that out and play Halo on original Xbox for a while. Mm. Halo 2. So
like a caveman?
Yes, with my Duke.
I love joking about that when the internet's out. It's like we gotta watch TV on discs like cavemen.
Well, I mean, Kelly, you're the one that went to a store to buy an Xbox 360 like a caveman.
Yeah, and I got like very grilled for it by the employee, and it annoyed the crap out of me. So
yeah. You met the caveman employee.
Yeah, yeah, the dude definitely looked Neanderthalish, but I digress. So talking caveman-esque games, you know, it's funny that you can't really get games like this anymore when it comes to classic JRPGs. Like even modern stuff like Persona and Metaphor, I feel like aren't that, aren't, I don't want to say is archaic, but it's kind of classic turn-based like this.
It's a dying breed.
I feel like it's starting to come back a bit, but yeah, I mean, when this came out, it was kind of like this, it wasn't much other than this, unless you were a portable gamer for a long time.
For the longest time, it was portable games, and then Squeenix kind of does more. Well, they have Dragon Quest, which is their turn-based stuff, and they do it more in retro-inspired games, like they had that Tokyo RPG Studio stuff game, Boring. Mm-hmm. But then you have basically you have Octopath Traveler and Bravely Default, which is their turn-based, but those are definitely more geared towards younger, well, I say younger audiences, when Octopath is pretty
Octopath's pretty dark.
But the only other place you can really
let's talk about her quest lines.
I forgot how dark Octopath got. But what I was trying to transition to was that the only other place you can get games like this anymore is indies.
Yeah. And like some of the upcoming games we're talking about. Chained Echoes, Sea of Stars.
Yeah, so our last show for the year, because of the timing of Christmas and all that, is going to be Chained Echoes. A game that I thought I was going to hate and end up putting like at least 60 hours in, give or take. I can't remember what my Steam library said, but I did like as much stuff as I could before I rolled credits, because I couldn't put the game.
Interesting. That one's been on my list for a while, but I've like it seems like every time I play like a turn-based indie, I want to delete the game from my brain. Just have not had good luck.
Yeah, and I get you, because Matt didn't really like, couldn't get into Chained Echoes, and Matt and I have a very similar taste. So it's like, well, I'm not going to be able to get into this either. But now looking at my playtime, 46.5 hours and 31 out of 37 achievements. I can't even. Yeah, so some of the achievements I just didn't get just because they were going to be grindy, like get all the ultimate weapons, master all sky armor weapons, find the Platypus Gang's treasure. It was stuff that was either grindy or I just couldn't find naturally. But yeah, some of these old school RPGs kind of hit that flavor of the old stuff. And this one definitely felt like it. I don't want to burn too much material.
I mean, that was one of the things I loved about Lost Odyssey.
And you said that you like Chained Echoes, didn't you, Pascal?
I did.
Okay.
He reviewed it very highly, 4.5, I believe.
4.5. All right.
Right. Cool.
I'm gonna have to give Chained Echoes a try.
Oh, you have 2 weeks.
No, there's no way in hell I would play enough of it to be on that show. But I do want to play it, because it's been like one of those games I wanted to play for a while, and I just kind of keep forgetting about it.
I think it's kind of weird, though. Same thing with Sea of Stars. I mean, it might just be I'm looking in, you know, certain channels or not looking in the right channels. Both games, at first I heard nothing but glowing praise, and then suddenly all the praise disappears and everybody just says how they quit on the games, put them down, couldn't finish them, didn't like this, didn't like that. Now I feel like that's all I hear. So take from that what you will.
And Sea of Stars was one of those ones that I thought that it was the perfect RPG, but then I start watching videos about it, which you know is something I shouldn't do. And seeing these videos kind of take the piss out of the plot, and it's like, yeah, I can definitely see where you're coming from. But that didn't change my opinion of the game, Eddie. It just made me kind of rethink how I thought about the story. I haven't watched any videos about Chained Echoes. Maybe I should, just as some research. Differing opinions, because I saw what Matt said about it and I got it, but at the same time, for some reason, it just grabbed me a little bit harder. And
It wasn't horrible at all, and I'll say this the next time. It's just, you know what? Something else came out, and I was like, this is kind of mid at hour 10 for me, so I didn't stick with it.
Oh, I get you. Sometimes the game will grab you almost instantly, and sometimes you kind of... For me, it took till Act 2 before I really got sucked in.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we'll get more into it next week, and then I think the week after that is our scheduling planning session, which is going to be fun. Can't wait to do that. It's going to be a very interesting year, given that 2023 was like a banger year for games. Got Final Fantasy 16, Baldur's Gate 3, Tears of the Kingdom, Fuga 2.
Now you're burning a whole year worth of material.
Yeah, no, I'm just I'm just teasing a whole year worth of material.
That's true too. See, I'm not in marketing. I don't know how to do that.
But that being said, we can wrap up the show now. At least that's what I was trying to do. Thank you, Wheels and Ryan and Pascal.
You're welcome.
Anytime.
And of course, thanks to Matt, who I could not do the show without.
I'm just the here for the dad jokes and post editing.
Yeah, but you're also here for other games.
Yes, yes. But, a solid third of our backtracks.
See, you don't give yourself the pressure of backtrack homework like I do. Well, sometimes you do.
There are times that I am suddenly really interested. On the staff channel about Ryza, and that was homework for Atelier Ryza or Atelier April's the past 2 years, and I've suddenly done my homework half a year ahead of time.
How do you think I feel? I've got to play through the whole Dusk trilogy by April.
I've done one of those. That might be it. I might do one more.
I'm halfway through that series. I should do that too.
Now Chained Echoes got pushed back for Wheels.
Yeah, sorry. Okay. Sorry.
Great, everybody.
We'll see. And of course, thank you, listener, for hanging out with us on this show. Always love having you around. Tune in for a pair of weeks where we've got Chained Echoes. And have a great rest of your week.